He clucks over at me in Mustang's voice. You are a favourite puppet, but you're not dancing as you ought. Will you reform and go north?
I
refuse.
No matter. He shoves me off the branch, hard. I hit another on the way down, fall into the snow. I smell dander. Fur. And then the beast roars.
Chapter 38. The Fall of Apollo. The bear is huge, bigger than a horse, big as a wagon, white as a bloodless corpse. Eyes red and yellow, razor black teeth long as my forearm. Nothing like the bears I've seen on the HC. A strip of red runs along its spine. Its paws are like fingers, eight on a hand. It's unnatural. Made by the carvers for sport. It's been brought to these woods to kill me in particular. Severo and I heard it roaring months back as we went to make peace with Diana. Now I feel it spittle. I stand there, stupid for a second. Then the bear roars again and lunges. I roll. Run. I sprint faster than I ever have in my life. I fly. But the bear is faster, if less agile. The woods shudder as it crashes through brush and trees. I run beside a massive god tree and dive through bramble. There the ground creaks beneath my feet, and I realize, as leaves and snow crumble under my feet, where I stand. I put the place between myself and the bear, and wait for the bear to tear through the underbrush. It bursts clear and lunges for me. I jump back. Then it is gone, shrieking as it plummets through the trapdoor onto a bed of wooden spikes. My joy would have been longer lived if I didn't dance back and step into a second trap. The earth flips. Well, I do. My leg snaps upward, and I fly into the air on the end of a rope. I dangle for hours, too frightened to call to my army for fear of Proctor Apollo. My face tingles and itches from the blood rushing to my head. Then a familiar voice cuts the night. Well, 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 it sneers from below. Looks like we've two pelts to skin. Severo smirks when I tell him I've allied with Mustang. At camp, where Mustang was preparing search parties to send out for me, his reputation precedes him amongst the northerners. The Minervans fear him. Tactus and the other dead horses, on the other hand, are delighted.
Why, if it isn't my belly buddy, Tactus drawls. Why the limp, my friend?
Your mother rode me ragged, Severo grunts.
Bah, you'd have to stand on your tiptoes to even kiss her chin.
Wasn't her chin I was trying to kiss.
Tactus claps his hands together in laughter and draws Severo in for an obnoxious hug. They're two very peculiar people. But I suppose snuggling in horse corpses gives a bond, makes twins of a morbid sort.
Where were you?
Mustang asks me quietly to the side. In a second, I say. Severo has only one eye now.
So he is the one-eyed demon the Apollonian emissary warned me about.
I always wondered what sort of mad little fellows you howlers were, Mustang says.
Little?
Severo asks.
I didn't mean to offend.
He grins.
I am little.
Well, we of Minerva thought you were ghosts.
She pats his shoulder. You're not. And I'm not a real Mustang, if you are wondering. No tail, you see. And no, she interrupts Tactus, I've never worn a saddle, since you were going to ask.
He was.
She'll do,
Severo mutters sideways to me.
I like them,
Mustang says of the howlers a few moments later. Make me feel tall.
Perfect.
Tactus picks up the bloodback pelt with a grunt.
Looky, look. They found something in Pax's size.
Before we join the group at the large fire that Pax stokes, Severo pulls me aside and produces a blanket. Inside is my sling blade.
Kept it safe for you after finding it in the mud, he says. And I made it sharper. Time for using a dull blade is over.
You're a friend. I hope you know that. I clap him on the shoulder. Not a game friend. A real friend now, when we're out of here. You know that, yes?
I'm not an idiot.
He blushes all the same. I learn from him around the campfire that he and the Howlers, Thistle, Screwface, Clown, Weed and Pebble, the dregs of my old house, stayed no longer than a day after I disappeared.
Cassius said the jackal took you,
Severo says through a mouthful of weevily bread.
Delicious nuts.
He eats like he hasn't seen food in weeks.
We sit fireside in the great woods, bathed in the light of crackling logs. Mustang, Milia, Tactus and Pax join us in leaning on a fallen tree in the snow. We're all bundled like animals.
I sit close with Mustang. Her leg is entwined with mine beneath the furs.
The bloodback fur stinks and crackles over the fire. Fat drips into the flames.
Pax will wear it when it dries.
Severo sought the jackal after Cassius fed him the lie.
My small friend doesn't get into details. He hates details. He just taps his empty eye socket and says,
"The jackal owes me."
You saw him then? I ask.
It was dark. I saw his knife. Didn't even hear his voice. I had to jump off the mountain. It was a long fall back to the rest of the pack.
He says it so plainly. Yet, I did notice his limp.
We couldn't stay in the mountains. His men, everywhere. But we took some of the mountains with us, Thistle says.
She pats the scalps on her waist with a motherly smile. Mustang shudders.
It's been chaos in the south. Apollo, Venus, Mercury and Pluto are all that's left, but I hear Mercury has been reduced to a force of roving vagabonds.
A pity. I was fond of their proctor. He almost chose me in the draft. Would have, if he could have. Wonder how things would have gone then.
Severo, with that leg, how fast can you run? Say, 2 kilometers?
I ask.
The others are puzzled by the question, but Severo just shrugs. Doesn't slow me. 1.5 minutes in this low graph.
I make a note to tell him my idea later.
We have more important things to discuss, Reaper. Tactus smiles. Now, I heard you were dangling upside down in the woods from this one here's trap.
He pats little Thistle on her thigh. She smiles as he lets his hand linger.
It's the scalp collection that draws his affection. You didn't think you'd sneak out of telling the tale, did you?
It's not so funny a thing as he might suspect. I finger my ring. Telling them would be signing their death warrants. Apollo and Jupiter listen to me now. I look at Mustang and feel hollow. I'll risk losing her just to win their rigged game.
If I were a good person, I would keep the ring on. I would hold my tongue. But there are plans to make, gods to undo.
I take my ring off and set it on the snow.
Let us for one moment pretend we are not from different houses, I say. Let's all of us talk as friends. Ringless.
Without horses, without mobility, I have no advantage over my enemy in the surrounding lands. Another lesson to be learned. I make an advantage for myself, a new strategy. I make them fear me.
My tactics are ones of fragmentation.
I split my army into 6 pieces of 10 under myself, Pax, Mustang, Tactus, Milia, and, due to a surprising recommendation from Milia, Nyla. I would have given Severo his own unit, but he and his howlers will not leave my side again. They blame themselves for the scar on my belly. My army sets into Apollo's holdings like starving wolves. We do not assail their castle, but we raid their forts. We bring fire to their supply stores. We shoot arrows at their legs. We fell their water supplies and tell prisoners false news and let them escape. We murder their goats and pigs. We hack their riverboats with axes. We steal weapons. I do not allow prisoners to be taken except if they are students from Venus, Juno, or Bacchus enslaved by Apollo. All others we let escape. The fear and legend must spread. This my army understands better than anything else. They are dogmatic. They tell each other tales of me around the campfires. Pax is their ringleader. He thinks I am myth made man. Many of my soldiers begin carving my sling blade into trees and walls. Tactus and Thistle carve sling blades into flesh. And the more industrious members of my army make standards of stained wolf pelts that we take into battle on the end of spears. I split the slaves of House Ceres and the other captured slaves from one another to integrate them into the various units. I know their allegiances are shifting, bit by bit. They begin to refer to themselves not as Ceres or Minerva or Diana, but by their unit name. I place 4 Ceres soldiers, the smallest, with Severo in the howlers. I do not know if the bakers will make for elite warriors as Mars's dregs did, but if anyone can carve off their baby fat, it's Severo. Fear gnaws at Apollo for a week. Our ranks swell. Theirs diminish. Freed slaves tell us of the terror in the castle, the worry that I will appear from the shadows with my bloody wolf cloaks to burn and maim. I do not fear House Apollo. They are lumbering fools who cannot adjust to my tactics. What I fear is the proctors and the jackal. To me, they are one and the same. After Apollo's failed attempt on my life, I fear they will be more direct. When will I wake with a razor in my spine? This is their game. At any time, I could die. I must destroy House Apollo now. Get Proctor Apollo out of the game before it is too late. My lieutenants and I sit around our fire in the woods to discuss the tactics of the next day. We are less than 2 miles from House Apollo's castle, but they dare not attack us. We are in the deep woods. They huddle in fear of us. We also don't attack them. I know Proctor Apollo would ruin even the cleverest of night assaults. Before we can begin, Nyla asks about the jackal. Severo's voice is quiet as he tells her what he learned in the mountains. It grows louder as he realizes we are all listening. His castle is somewhere in the low mountains. Subterranean, not on the high peaks. Just near Vulcan. Vulcan got off to a prime start, fast-like. They blitzed Pluto on the 3rd day. Efficient turds. Pluto wasn't ready. So the jackal took control and had them retreat into their deep tunnels. Vulcan came howling in with advanced weapons from their forges. It was all going to be over. The jackal would have been a slave from the 1st week on. So, he collapsed the tunnel. No plan, no way out, in order to preserve his chance to win the game. Killed 10 of his own house, tons of high drafts. Medbots couldn't save anyone. Stranded 40 of the rest in the dark caves. Plenty of water, no food. They were there for nearly a month before they dug their way out. He smiles, and I remember why Fitchner called him Goblin. Guess what they ate? If a jackal is caught in a trap, it'll chew off its own leg. Who told me that? The fire crackles between us. I would have expected Mustang to shift uncomfortably, but instead, what I see from her is anger, as the details are relayed. Pure anger. Her jaw flexes, and her face loses a shade. I grip her hand beneath the blanket, but it does not grip back.
How did you find all that out? Pax rumbles.
Severo taps one of his curved knives with a fingernail, allowing a soft ding into the night air. It echoes into the woods, bouncing off trees and returning to our ears like a lost phrase. Then I can hear nothing from the woods. Nothing beyond the fire. My heart leaps into my throat, and I catch Severo's eye. He'll have to find Tactus. A jam field envelops us.
Hello, children,
a voice says from the darkness.
Such a bright fire is dangerous at night, and you're like little puppies, all snuggled together. No, don't get up.
His voice is melodious, frivolous, eerie to hear after so many months of hardship. No one's voice sounds like that. He strolls in lightly and plops down beside Pax.
Apollo.
This time he brought no bear, only a grand spear that drips purple sparks along its business end.
Proctor Apollo, welcome, I say.
Sentinels perch above us in the trees, their arrows pointed at the proctor. I wave the trap away and ask the proctor why he is here, as if we've never met. His presence sends a very simple message. My friends are in danger.
To tell you to return home, my dear nomads.
He opens up a flagon of wine and passes it around. No one drinks, except Severo. He holds on to the flagon.
Proctors aren't supposed to interfere with things. It's in the rules,
Pax says in confusion.
By what right do you come here? This is dirty play.
Mustang seconds his question. The Oriot sighs, but before he can say anything, Severo stands and belches. He begins walking off.
Where are you going?
Apollo snaps.
Don't walk away from me. Going to piss. Drank all your wine. Rather I piss here.
He cocks his head and touches his small stomach.
Maybe shit, too.
Apollo wrinkles his nose and looks back to us, dismissing Severo.
Influencing is hardly dirty play, my giant friend, he explains. I merely care for your well-being. I am here, after all, to guide you in your studies. It would be best for you all to return to the north, that is all. Better strategy, let's say. Finish your battle there. Consolidate your power. Then expand out. It is the rules of war. Do not expose yourself when weak. Do not push your enemy to fight when you are inferior. You have no cavalry, no shelter, meager weapons. You are not learning as you ought. His grin is welcoming. It slashes through his beautiful face like a crescent moon as he twirls the rings on his finger, waiting for our response.
It is kind of you to consider our well-being, Mustang replies in mocking high lingo. I do say, very kind. Warms my bones. Paying special attention, no less, to the fact that you're from another house. But tell me, does my proctor know you're here? Does Mars's?
She nods over to Silent Milia.
Does Juno's? Are you doing a naughty naughty, good sir? If you're not, then why the jam field? Or do others watch?
Apollo's eyes harden, though his smile remains.
To be quite frank, your proctors don't know what you children are playing at. You had your chance, Virginia. You lost. Don't allow yourself to be bitter. Darrow here beat you fair and sound.
or did your winter together blind you to the fact that there can only be one winning house, only one victorious Primus? Were all of you truly so blinded? This boy can give you nothing.
He looks around at each of them.
I shall repeat, since you are a rusty lot. Darrow's win will not mean you win. No one will offer you an apprenticeship because they see him being the key to your success. You merely follow, like General Ney or Ajax Minor.
And who remembers them?
This Reaper does not even have his own standard. He is using you. That is all. He is embarrassing you and ruining your chances for careers beyond this first year.
You're quite annoying, all due respect, Proctor,
Nyla says without her usual kindness. And you're still a slave.
Apollo points to her mark. Fit for all sorts of abuse.
Only till I earn the right to wear one of those.
Nyla gestures to Mustang's wolf cloak.
Your loyalty is touching, but...
Pax interrupts.
Would you let me whip you, bloody Apollo? Darrow did. Let me whip you and I'll obey like a pink. Promise on the graves of my ancestors, those of Telemannus and the...
You're nothing more than a bureaucratic pixie, Milia hisses. Do us a favour and piss off.
My lieutenants are loyal, though I shudder to think what Tactus or Sevra would have said had they been around the fire with us. I lean forward to stare down Apollo. Still, I must provoke him. Do a solid, eh? Take your advice, shove it up your arse, and piss off.
Someone laughs in the air above us, a woman's laugh. Other proctors watch from inside the jam field. I see silhouettes in the smoke.
How many what? Jupiter?
Venus, maybe, by the laugh.
That would be perfect. The fire flickers above Apollo's face. He is angry.
Here is the logic I know. The winter could get colder, children. When it gets cold outside, things die. Like wolves. Like bears. Like mustangs.
I have a reply, and it is perfectly long-winded.
I wonder, Apollo. What happens if the drafters find out that you're arranging to have the Arch-Governor's son win? If you were, say, rigging the game, like a bizarre crime lord.
Apollo freezes. I continue.
When you tried killing me in the woods with that stupid bear, you failed. Now you come here like the desperate fool you are, to threaten my friends when they do not slaver at the idea of betraying me. Will you kill us all? I know you can edit what you like from the footage the drafters see, but however will you explain to all our drafters how we all died?
My lieutenants feign their shock. I go on.
Say an imperator of a fleet, say a legate, say... any of the drafters of any of the other houses found out that the Arch-Governor was paying the proctors to cheat, to eliminate the competition so that his son would win and their children would lose. Do you think there would be consequences for the proctors being bribed? For the Arch-Governor? Do you think they might care that their children are dying in a rigged game? Or that you're getting paid to ruin their meritocratic system? The best shall rise, or is it the best connected?
Apollo's jaw tightens. He looks up to the other proctors. They wisely stay invisible.
He must have drawn the short straw to come down here to be the face of their cheating.
My lieutenants stay silent as he speaks.
If they did find out, children, then there would be consequences for everyone. Apollo threatens. So feel free to guard your tongues while you have them.
Or what?
Mustang asks violently.
What do you think you're going to do?
You, of all people, should know, he says.
I don't understand this point, but this charade has run its course. I've counted the seconds since Severo left. The Proctors have not. I turn to Mustang.
How fast can Severo run 2 kilometers?
A minute and a half in this gravity, I do believe. Though he's a little liar, so likely faster.
And how far is Apollo's castle?
Oh, I'd say 3 kilometers, maybe a little more.
Apollo jumps to his feet, looking around for Severo.
Splendid, I say. Say, Mustang, do you know what I like most about jam fields?
That no sound can get out?
No. That no sound can get in.
Apollo disengages the jam field, and we hear the howls. They come from the distance, 2 miles away. From ramparts. From Apollo's castle.
Medbots wail toward the cries, streaking across the distant sky.
Venus! Why are you not watching them? You stupid!
Apollo snarls at the empty air.
The little one took off his ring, an invisible woman cries. They all took off their rings. I can't see anything without their rings on, and not in a jam field.
But they're all back on by now, I say. So pull up your data pad and tell me what you see.
You little...
Apollo's hands clench. I flinch back. Mustang steps between us, as does Pax.
Uh-oh.
Pax booms, thumping his huge axe against his chest. The armor beneath his wolf cloak thumps rhythmically.
Uh-oh!
Snow flies as Apollo soars out of the woods, the other Proctors on his heels. They will be too late. Edit all they like. Interfere all they like. The battle for House Apollo has begun, and Severo and Tactus have claimed the ramparts. My lieutenant and I arrive at the battle in time to see Tactus climbing the highest tower, a knife in his teeth. There, standing on the edge of the 100-meter parapet, like some careless Greek champion, he pulls down his pants and pisses on the banner of House Apollo. He's crawled through shit to earn that banner. The slaves we captured throughout the week told us of the castle's weaknesses, large latrine halls. And so Tactus, Severo, and the Howlers exploited them in dreadfully efficient time. House Apollo's soldiers woke to demons covered in dung. Oh, how terribly my conquering soldiers smell as they open the gates for me. Inside, it's a mass of chaos. The castle is tall, white, ornate. Its plaza stands round and has 6 grand doorways that lead to 6 grand spiraling towers. Sheep and cows crowd makeshift pens on the far side of the plaza. Apollo guards have retreated there. More of their allies stream from the tower doorways behind them. My men are outnumbered, 3 to 1, but mine are freemen, not slaves. They will fight better. Yet, it is not numbers that threatens to turn the tide against my invading army. It's the Apollo Primus, Novas. The Proctor gave him his own pulse weapon. A spear that glimmers with purple sparks. Its tip touches one of the dead horses from Diana, and the girl flips 10 feet backward like a broken toy convulsing on the ground as its gears fall off their tracks. I gather my forces near the gatehouse just inside the plaza. Many are still in the towers, like Tactus. I've got Pax, Milia, Nyla, Mustang, and 30 others at my back. The enemy Primus marshals his own forces. His weapon alone could ruin us.
Mustang, ready with that standard?
I ask. I feel her hand on the small of my back, just beneath my breastplate. I wear no helm. My hair is bound by leather.
My face is dark with soot. My right hand carries my slingblade, the left a shortened stunpipe. Nyla carries the standard of Ceres.
Pax, we're the scythe. Girls, you're the pickers.
My men in the towers howl as they sprint and jump down from their perches to join the battle, streaming into the plaza from all angles. Their stained wolf cloaks reek. The cobblestones between my band and Apollo's lie thick with ankle-high drifts of snow. Proctors glint in the air above, waiting for the pulse spear to make short work of my army.
Take their Primus, Mustang whispers in my ear.
She points to the tall, hard boy and smacks my butt.
Claim him.
20 meters and stop, Pax.
He nods at my command.
The Primus is mine!
I roar to my army and to theirs.
Novas, you gory whore! You are mine, you piss-eating snail, you foul piece of shit!
As the tall, mad invader with the sling blade screams at their Primus, Apollo's forces shirk instinctively away.
Enslave the rest! I howl.
Then Pax and I charge. The rest stream after, trying to catch my heels. I let Pax overtake me. He's screaming with his war axe and charging at Novas and his band of bodyguards, heavily armored boys and girls with crimson handprints on their helmets. They lead the charge of the enemy host, going straight at Pax, lowering their spears to stop his mad charge. These are the tall sort, the dashing killers who have long since grown too arrogant to understand they are in danger, or to feel fear as they make plans to meet Pax in arms. Then Pax stops. And without breaking stride, I jump so his hand catches my foot. I push off and he launches me 10 meters forward into the air. I'm howling the entire way like a thing torn from bloody damn nightmares until I smash into the bodyguards. 3 go down. A random spear catches my stomach and scrapes along my ribs, spinning me just as a trident pierces the air where my head had been. I gain my feet, swing horizontally, sweeping legs. I spin away from a thrust and hack down diagonally as I come from my spin, shattering someone tall at the collarbone. Another spear comes at me. I slap it to the side and run along its length, jumping to bury my knee into the face of an Apollo high draft. He falls back, taking me with him, my knee stuck in his helmet's visor. I slash madly as I go from the high vantage, stunning 3 other high drafts with looping blows till I teeter down to the ground. We hit the snow. The high draft's nose is broken and he's unconscious, but my knee is numb and bloody from the impact as I jerk it out of his helmet. I roll away, expecting spears to fillet me. They don't. I shatter the head of the Apollo army in 1 mad charge. Pax and my army sweep in like an iron curtain till I'm left with Novas in the center of the chaos. He's tall and strong. A sweeping arc from his spear shatters a howler's shield. He blasts Milia backwards and catches Pax in the arm with the spear, knocking him to the ground like a toy. I'm taller and stronger.
Novas, you little girl, I shout. You snivelling pink.
His eyes flash when he sees me coming. The battle takes a collective breath as he wheels toward me like an elk turning on the leader of a wolf pack. We stalk toward one another. He lunges first. I dodge and spin along the length of the spear till I'm behind him. Then, with 1 massive swing, like I'm hacking down a tree with my sling blade, I break his leg and take his spear. He moans like a child. I sit on his chest, smug with the satisfaction that I did not moan like this when my legs were broken and rewoven in Mickey's carve shop. I make a show of yawning despite the chaos swirling around me. Mustang takes the reins of battle. Only 1 member of House Apollo escapes. A girl. A fast girl, but an unimportant member of their house. Somehow, she jumps from the highest tower and simply floats down to the ground with her house's standard. Almost like magic. But I see the distortion around her.
Proctor Apollo preserves his position in the game. The girl finds a horse and rides away from my horseless army. Pax hurls a spear at her from a distance. His aim is true and would have pinned the horse to the turf through the neck, but a freakish wind miraculously knocks the spear wide. In the end, it's Mustang who takes a horse from the Apollo stables and chases the girl down with the howlers, Thistle and Pebble. She brings her back, bent over her own horse's neck, spanking her butt with the standard as they gallop back. My army roars as Mustang trots into the conquered castle square. We've already freed the House Ceres slaves. They've earned their place in my army. I wave down at Mustang from my perch beside Severo and Tactus on the high ramparts. Her feet dangle carelessly over the edge. House Apollo has fallen in less than 30 minutes, despite Apollo's interference with the pulse spear. Proctor Apollo confers with Jupiter and Venus in the sky. They glitter in the dawn light, as though nothing has happened. But I know he will have to leave the game. The standard and the castle are taken. He cannot hurt me any longer.
You're through, I taunt Apollo. Your house has fallen.
My army roars once more. I bask in the sound and the winter air as the sun peaks over the western lip of the Valles Marineris. Most of those voices would be slaves. Instead, they follow willingly. Soon, even those of House Apollo will follow me. I laugh wildly. The fire of victory is hot in my veins. We have beaten one proctor, but Jupiter can still hurt us. His house is unbent, unbroken, far to the north. A quick rage overtakes me along with another, darker passion, one of arrogance, furious, mad arrogance. I grab the pulse spear, cock my arm, and hurl the weapon as hard as I can at the gathered proctors. My army watches this act of impudence. The three proctors scatter after the pulse spear goes through their shielding. They turn to look at me. Fire glitters in their eyes. But the passion in me was not quenched by a mere spear throw. I hate these scheming fools. I will ruin them.
Jupiter! You are next! You are next, you piece of dog shit!
Then Pax bellows my name. And then Tactus's voice echoes it. Then Nyla from a far tower. And soon 100 voices chanted throughout the conquered castle, from the courtyard to the high parapets and towers. They beat their swords and spears and shields, and then they throw them at the proctors. 100 missiles thump harmlessly into pulse shields, and many of my army must scatter so they are not impaled by the falling weapons, but it is a sweet sight, a sweet sound of metal rain on cobbled stone. And again, they take up my name. They chant and chant the name of the Reaper at the proctors, because they know whom we now fight. Chapter 39. The Proctor's Bounty. My army sleeps well into the morning. I have no need of rest, though I keep company with Severo and half a dozen others on the ramparts. They stand close, as though any space might present the proctors an opportunity to kill me. Severo has freed 5 Mercury students from the Apollo slave groups. They cluster around him on the ramparts, playing games of speed, slapping each other's knuckles to see who can move the fastest. I don't play, because I win too easily. Best to let the children have their fun. After the taking of the castle, even though Severo and Tactus did the heavy lifting, my boys and girls think that makes me some sort of marvel. Mustang told me it is a rare thing.
It's as if they think you're something out of time.
I don't understand.
Like, you're one of the old conquerors. The ancient Gulls who usurped Earth, destroyed her fleets and all that. They use it as an excuse not to compete with you. Because how could Hephaestus compete with Alexander? Or Antonius with Caesar?
My insides knot. This is but a game, and they love me this much. When the rebellion comes, these boys and girls will be my enemies, and I will replace them with Reds. How fanatical, then, will those Reds be? And will that fanaticism matter a lick if they have to stand against creatures like Severo, like Tactus, like Pax and Mustang? I watch Mustang slink toward me along the rampart. She limps ever so slightly from a sprained ankle, yet she's all grace. Her hair is a nest of twigs. Circles ring her eyes. She smiles at me. She's beautiful. Like Io. From the ramparts, we can see over the great woods that glimpse the beginnings of Mars's highlands to the north. The mountains glower at us from the west, to our left. Mustang points to the sky. Proctor, incoming. My bodyguards tighten around me, but it's only Fitchner. Severo spits over the ramparts.
Our prodigal parent returneth.
Fitchner descends with a smile that tells a tale of exhaustion, fear, and a little bit of pride.
May we talk?
He asks me, looking about at my scowling friends. Fitchner and I sit together in the Apollo war room. Mustang stokes the fire. Fitchner eyes her skeptically, disliking her presence. He has an opinion on most things, like someone else I know.
You've made such a mess of things, lad.
Let's agree that you won't call me lad, I say. He nods. There's no gum in his mouth. He doesn't know how to say what he wants to tell me. It's the worry in his eyes that cues me in. Apollo has not left Olympus, I say. He stiffens, surprised at my guess.
Correct. He's still there.
And what does that mean, Fitchner? Mustang comes to sit beside me.
Just that,
Fitchner answers, looking at me.
He has not left Olympus like he ought. It's all a mess. Apollo was getting a juicy appointment if the jackal won. Same with Jupiter and some of the others. There was talk of one of the praetor knight positions opening up on Luna.
And now that choice is slipping away, Mustang says. She glances over at me with a smirk.
Because of a boy. Yes.
I laugh. The jam field makes the sound echo. So, what is to be done?
You still want to win, yes?
Fitchner asks.
Yes. And that is the point of all this?
He asks me, though it's clear there's something else in his head.
You'll get an apprenticeship, no matter.
I lean forward and tap my finger on the table.
The point is to show them that they can't gory well cheat in their own game. That the arch-governor can't just say his son is best and should beat me just because he was born lucky. This is about merit.
No, Fitchner says, leaning forward.
It's about politics.
He glances at Mustang. Will you send her away already?
Mustang stays. Mustang, he mocks. So, Mustang, what do you think about the arch-governor cheating for his son?
Mustang shrugs.
Kill or be killed. Cheat or be cheated. Those are the rules I've seen Oriots follow, especially Peerless Scard.
Cheat or be cheated.
Fitchner taps his upper lip.
Interesting.
You should know about the cheating part, she says.
You need to let Darrow and me have a word, Mustang.
She stays,
It's okay,
she mutters cryptically. She squeezes my shoulder as she leaves. I am bored of your proctor anyway. When Mustang is gone, Fitchner stares at me. He reaches to his pocket, hesitates, then pulls something out. A small box. He tosses it on the table and gestures for me to open it. Somehow I know what is inside. Well, you bastards do owe me a few bounties. I laugh bitterly as I slip Dancer's knife ring onto my finger. I flex the joint, and a blade pops out, extending along the top of the finger 8 inches. I flex the joint again, and it slithers home. The obsidians took it from you before you went through the passage, yes? I was told it was your father's. Someone told you that. I pick at the war room table with the blade. How very inaccurate of them. You don't need to be snide, lad. My eyes flick up to look into Fitchner's. You came here to win an apprenticeship. You've done that. If you keep pushing the proctors, they will kill you. I seem to remember us already having this conversation. Darrow, there is no slagging point to what you are doing. It is reckless. No point, I echo. If you beat the arch-governor's boy, then what? What does that achieve? Everything, I snap. I shudder with anger and stare at the fire till my voice finds control again. It proves I am the best gold in this school. It shows that I can do whatever they can. Why should I even speak to you, Fitchner? I've done all this without your help. I don't need you. Apollo tried to kill me, and you did nothing, nothing. So what exactly do I owe you? Maybe this? I let the blade slither out. Darrow. Fitchner. I roll my eyes. He slaps the table. Don't talk to me like I'm a fool. Look at me. Look at me, you condescending little twit. I look at him. His stomach paunch has grown. His face is haggard for a gold. His hair yellow and slicked back. He's never been handsome. Less now than ever. Look at me, Darrow. Everything I have, I've had to fight for. I was not born to an arch-governor's household. This is as far as I could ever go. Yet I should go much further. My son should go further. But he can't. And he won't. He'll die if he tries. Everyone has a limit, Darrow. A limit they can't skip past. Yours is higher than mine, but it's not as high as you'd gory well like. If you go past it, they'll knock you down. He stares away, as if ashamed, glowering at the fire. His son. It's in their colouring. In the face. In the disposition and the way they speak to one another. I'm a fool for not saying it out loud sooner. You're Severo's father, I say. He does not respond for some time. When he does, his voice is pleading. You make him think he can climb higher than he can. You'll kill him, boyo. And you'll kill yourself. Then help us, I urge him. Give me something I can use against Apollo. Or better, fight them with me. Gather the other proctors, and we'll take the battle to them. I can't, boyo. I can't. I sigh. No, I thought you wouldn't. My career would be over in a pinch if I helped you. All I've slaved for, all the many things, would be risked. For what? Just to prove a point to the arch-governor? Everyone is so frightened of change, I say, before smiling sincerely at the broken man. You remind me of my uncle. There will be no change. Fitchner grumbles as he stands. Never is. Know your damn place, and you won't make it out of this, boyo. He looks like he wants to reach and touch my shoulder. He doesn't. Hell, the trap's already set for you. You're walking right into it.
I'm ready for the jackal's traps, Fitchner. Or Apollo's. It makes no difference. They won't be able to stop what's coming for them. No, Fitchner says, hesitating for a moment. Not their traps. The girls.
I answer him in a way he will understand.
Fitchner, do not play me for a fool with vague, annoying references to duplicity. My army is mine, one in heart and body and soul. They can no more betray me at this point than I can betray them. We are something you have not seen before, so stop.
He shakes his head. This is your fight, Boyo.
Yes, it is my fight.
I smile. Now is the time I've been waiting for.
Fitzner, hold up,
I say, before he reaches the door. He stops and looks back. I kick back my chair and stride over to him. He eyes me curiously, then I stick out my hand.
Despite everything, thank you.
He clasps it.
Good luck, Tao, he says. But take care of Severo. The little shit will follow you anywhere, no matter what I say.
I'll take care of him. I promise. My Helldiver grip tightens on his hand. For a moment, if only a moment, we are friends. Then he winces at the pressure my hand is putting on his. He laughs at first, then he understands, and his eyes widen.
Sorry, I say. That's when I break his nose and slam my elbow into his temple till he no longer moves.
Chapter 40 Paradigm.
Fitchner left, she asks me.
Through the window, I say. I watch Mustang across Apollo's white war room table. A blizzard has risen outside, no doubt meant to keep my army inside the castle, around their warm fires and hot pots of soup. Her hair coils about her shoulders, held by leather bands. She wears the wolf cloak like the others, though hers is streaked with crimson. Muddy boots with spurs are kicked up on the table. Her standard, the only weapon she really favors, leans on a chair beside her. Mustang's face is a quick one, quick to mocking smiles, quick to pleasant frowns. She gives me the smile and asks what is on my mind. I am wondering when you will betray me, I say. Her eyebrows knit together.
You're expecting that.
Cheat or be cheated, I say, echoed by your own lips.
Are you going to cheat me?
She says.
No, because what advantage would you gain? You and I have beaten this game. They would have us believe one must win at the cost to all the rest. That isn't true. And we're proving it.
I say nothing.
You have my trust because when you saw me hiding in the mud after taking my castle, you let me escape. She explains thoughtfully. And I have your trust because I pulled you from the mud when Cassius left you for dead.
I do not respond.
So there is your answer. You are going to do great things, Darrow.
She never calls me Darrow.
Maybe you don't have to do them alone?
Her words make me smile.
Then I bolt upright, startling her. Get our men, I order.
I know she was looking forward to resting here. I was, too. The smell of soup tempts me. So does the warmth and the bed and the thought of spending a quiet moment with her. But that is not how men conquer. We're going to surprise the Proctors. We're going to take Jupiter.
We can't surprise them.
She taps her ring. The jam field Fitchner had is gone.
We'd ditched the rings completely, but they are our insurance. The proctors may be able to edit out a few things here and there, but common sense dictates that they can't tamper with the footage too much, or the drafters will get suspicious.
And even if we make it through this storm, what will taking Jupiter accomplish? She asks. If Apollo didn't leave when his house lost, Jupiter won't either. You're just going to provoke them into interfering. We should go after the jackal now.
I know the proctors are watching me plan this. I want them to know where I'm going. I'm not ready for the jackal, I tell her. I need more allies. She looks at me, eyebrows pinched together. She doesn't understand, but it doesn't matter. She will, soon enough. Despite the blizzard, my army moves swiftly. We bundle ourselves in cloaks and furs so thickly that we look like animals stumbling through the snow. At night, we follow the stars, moving despite the mounting winds and the piling snow. My army does not grumble. They know I will not lead them purposelessly. My new soldiers press themselves harder than I would have thought possible. They have heard of me. Pax makes sure of that. And they are desperate to impress me. It becomes problematic. Wherever I walk, the procession around me suddenly doubles their effort so that they overtake those in front or outpace those behind. The blizzard is vicious. Pax always stands close to me and Mustang, as though he means to block us from the wind. He and Severo are always stepping on each other's toes to be nearest me, though Pax would likely want to light my fires and tuck me in bed at night if I let him, while Severo would tell me to pick my own ass. I see his father in him every time I look at him now. He seems weaker now that I know his family. There's no reason that should be the case. I guess I just supposed he really did spring from the loins of a she-wolf. Eventually the snows cease, and spring comes fast and hard, which confirms my suspicions. The proctors are playing games. The howlers make sure all eyes are to the sky in case proctors decide to harass us as we make our way. None do. Tactus keeps an eye out for their tracks, but it is quiet. We see no enemy scouts, hear no war trumpets in the distance, see no smoke rising except to the north, in Mars's highlands. We raid provision stores in burnt and broken castles as we push toward Jupiter. There are jugs from Bacchus's castle that Severo was disappointed to discover full of grape juice instead of wine, salted beef from Juno's deep cellars, molding cheeses, fish wrapped in leaves, and bags of the ever-present smoked horse meat. They keep us full as we march. In four rugged days, I have reached and besieged Jupiter's triple-walled castle in the low mountain passes. Snow melts swiftly enough to make the ground soggy for our horses. Streams flow through our camp. I do not bother devising a plan of action. I simply tell Pax's, Milia's, and Nyla's divisions that whoever gives me the fortress will win a prize. The defenders are very few, and my army takes the outer fortifications in a day by making a series of wooden ramps under intermittent arrow barrages. My other three divisions scout the surrounding territory en force in case the jackal decides to stick his nose into this. Jupiter's main army, it seems, is stranded across the now-thawed Argos, laying siege to Mars's castle. They did not expect the river to thaw so quickly. Still, there's no sign of the jackal's men, or of the proctors. I wonder if they found Fichtner locked in one of the Apollo castle cells yet. I left him food and water, and a face full of bruises. On the third day of the siege, a white flag is flown from Jupiter's ramparts. A thin boy of middling height and timid smiles slips out of Jupiter's castle's postern gate. The castle lies on high, rocky ground. It is sandwiched between two huge rock faces, so its three-tiered walls bow outward. Soon I would have tried sending men down the rock faces. It would have been a job for the howlers, but they've had enough glory.
This siege belongs to the soldiers captured when we fought Apollo. The boy walks tentatively in front of the main gate. I meet him there with Severo, Milia, Nyla, and Pax. We are a fearsome lot, even without Tactus and Mustang, though Mustang could never really be called fearsome in appearance. Maybe spirited, at best. Milia looks like something out of a nightmare. She's taken to wearing trophies like Tactus and Thistle. And Pax has cut notches along his huge axe for each slave he has taken. In front of my lieutenants, the boy shows his nervousness. His smiles are quick, almost as if he's worried we might disapprove of them. The ring on his finger is that of Jupiter. He looks hungry because it barely fits on him any longer. Name is